Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. It's time for Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and I'm your host, Roxana. Host. That's a funny word for being a DJ at KGBM. It's not being a host for a tick or a mosquito or a parasite. Instead of being the unwilling food or shelter source for such things, my feeling about it is that I'm offering food for your ear and imagination. And that makes you, dear listener, my guest for the hour. Thanks for being here. Well, I'm recording this, as you can hear, during a nice little summer shower. I hope you like rainstorms. We are double dipping into the Desert Oracle Radio archives again today. You know how sometimes your plans have to be changed due to the unexpected? Well, our first episode tonight put Ken Lane into that predicament. From July 17th, 2020, in celebration of Desert Oracle Radio's 100th broadcast, here is Communique 100, the voice of the desert.
Communique 100, Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
In twilight reverie, Jupiter bright and bulging in the eastern sky, the zigzag fractures in every institution. Walking past the man-made landmarks on this sandy trail on this summer's night. A pile of discarded crutches seen from a tarot card. A discount club recliner rotting in the dry heat, the fabric worn and falling at its sides. A big radio tower blinking atop Nolina Peak. The dog on sudden high alert, as the sound of coyotes singing reaches us from a mile away. But go back to Los Angeles stickers on all locals' cars. The strip mall space is all for lease. The hardware store aisles where workmen's masks droop down beneath their scraggly-ass goatees. 93 at 9 p.m. and still you think, well, we got it a lot better than the people down in Palm Springs. A dead rattlesnake on the dirt road, tire tracks across his belly. A single jet plane overhead, where there was once a steady wagon train through the sky. Jetliners lose their romance when you know where they're going. when you know from the altitude and the direction and the distant whine of the engines whether it's headed for Ontario and the Inland Empire or looping around Gorgonio to Palm Springs International. Or in descent for LAX. Night has fallen on the desert. So settle yourself down and get a drink if you're dry. They don't let us out much anymore. In fact, they don't let us out at all.
I was talking to a friend of mine I ran into, by the way, in the grocery store.
Yeah.
Not a friend of mine, a guy I work with. He's a big conspiracy buff, talking about aliens, talking about all that stuff. But more importantly, he's like, oh, you know, boy, there's this really great show that I love called Desert Oracle Radio. I said, you've been listening to the episodes. Do you ever listen to any of the ones where this guy is always trying to, like, build things in the desert and all that? And he's like, yeah, that's me.
We've got Brendan Mays on the line. Brendan, good to have you back on the program, and I want to get right to it. Brendan, of all the things you have been involved with, this one is the first to get you accused of running a pornography studio. I'm speaking, of course, about the new nature preserve, private nature preserve that you have opened north of Landers, and you're marketing the preserve to the fetish practitioner, this being the ones who sexualize the natural features of the desert environment.
Well, Ken, we don't like to think of it. I don't really understand. People say pornography, and they see objectification of women. They see maybe a demeaning sexual act. They see people selling their dignity for some money. Maybe they have drug problems or something. This has nothing to do with that. This has to do with, quite simply, a celebration of nature. That's what it is. It's a celebration of nature. And I wish people would not use this term pornographic to do what we are doing, which is a naturalist calling. You know, it's a place where people can feel free to express their very deep-seated and very passionate feelings for nature, and to be in nature as one of God's creatures, experiencing the wonders and the beauty of Joshua Tree in a very natural, primal way. I don't think of it pornographic in any way at all.
The complaint from the local conservation groups is that many mature Joshua trees were damaged as they were holding some type of sex harnesses.
Oh, sex harness. Again, we don't call them sex harnesses, firstly. I mean, that sounds like one of those sex swings or something one of those Brazilian type of hammocks that you can stick, you know, and that people play with it from below. It's not like that at all. That's not what it is. It's not a sex sling or a sex swing or anything like that. We call it a pleasure papoose. And basically what we do is we swaddle the individual tightly. So they're kind of constrained. And, you know, some people very much enjoy this feeling. They tightly bound their hands and feet and wrap them tightly with a muslin. And then other people come up and appreciate the revealed human form through the swaddling, you know, touching, caressing, some people might say cosseting, the human form dangling from the tree. And it is has nothing, no damage has been done to any tree, no damage has been done to any person. We did have in the first couple of them, we had a couple incidents where we didn't understand the load-bearing properties of the yucca, of the Joshua tree. You understand it's not like a normal tree with hardwood, and, you know, it's not like a normal tree that has sapwood and hardwood and can support great amounts of weight. And that's something we did not anticipate. So, yes.
You did not anticipate that Joshua trees are lightly rooted yucca plants that...
No, we did not. And that is a mistake that we made that we did not repeat. We learned from our mistakes, and that's something we did not repeat. We only damaged a couple, three or four trees, and we quickly learned about the load-bearing properties of the yucca tree, which is basically they really can't support any weight at all except their own weight. We've moved on to other activities, and we've left the Joshua trees alone for the time being until we can figure out a way that they might be able to support weight. We did have an arborist come out from Santa Clarita who works mostly with native oaks, and he had managed to stabilize a few of the Joshua trees with guy wires and turnbuckles. But it was kind of unsightly, you know, you run a bunch of wires up through the tree and you're boring through it, you know, you're running screw eyes through it, and it just looks horrible. It doesn't look right. It doesn't look natural. So we did, you know, 5 or 6, 10 of those and just said, you know, the heck with it. We're gonna forget about using the Joshua tree.
One of the concerns, as the newspaper article expressed, was that this was less a nature preserve than a timeshare property.
Well, Ken, that's every business has to have a structure. Every business has to be formed along pre-existing business structures or instruments that are legal, basically. And you can set them up and incorporate the timeshare. And the timeshare financial instrument, basically, was the existing legal framework. And you know, the timeshare is the existing, the standard legal framework that we could work within.
Reports have emerged in recent weeks that some customers say they had been pressured into purchasing timeshare agreements with your company based on implied threats about photography that had been taken without their permission on the nature preserve.
I am not aware of any... Look, okay, everybody knows the deal with timeshares. They take you to Hawaii, they set you up, all expenses paid, no obligation. Nice, you're in Kauai, you're there, there's those black crabs scattering about, there's dolphins out there, it's beautiful. And then comes the hard sell. Everybody knows that. The husband goes, the wife is not sure, she's just scared of the hard sell. The husband, he can put up with it. He works in business. He's a sales guy. He knows all their tactics. They're going to get a nice vacation out of this thing. Turns out 40 to 50% of those guys, we work on them, and we get them to buy into the timeshare. Because secretly, they want it. We're not making people do anything they don't want to do. They want the timeshare. They want the experience. They want a piece of the desert. And we give it to them. Now, yes, there's some negotiation in there. We negotiate with these people. I haven't heard anything about us using the photography or the hidden cameras or anything like that to get people to do what we want. But this was going to be a volunteer thing. No one's going to get paid any money. And as for a church, some sort of a church event, I don't know why anybody would be attracted to that. On it has anything to do with any church. It's the Church of Satan. Now, of course, I'm just saying Church of Satan as a, you know, as a joke or something. We are not affiliated with the Church of Satan. We have nothing to do with Anton LaVar or any of his followers. We have nothing to do with those people. Just saying that nothing of the sort happens. No one was tricked. I did, well, because I lived there, and that's when the war broke out. It was the second Gulf War.
Yeah.
Or whatever the hell it was. It wasn't the second Gulf War, actually. No, it's a reaction to 9/11.
Well, it was the second Iraq War.
Yeah.
With some Afghanistan war, really. Put in there.
Yeah, with some Afghanistan thrown in, basically. The people that were working in the building where I was working, the next company over, were two Afghans, two brothers, who had a mortgage company, and they were completely overwhelmed and abashed and shocked and freaked out, everything. Well, the centerpiece to the Dia de los Muertos stage was a giant ziggurat, a pyramid, like a Mayan thing or Aztec thing. I'm not really sure the difference there, but, you know, that's the one of the things that got people kind of really upset. We wouldn't use that. It's actually chocolate liqueur. The attendees gather at the bottom of the trough and slop, you know, drink from the trough. I shouldn't say slop, but drink from the trough and get drunk and have a good time like you're supposed to. And, you know, we crushed them up with a mortar and pestle, and everybody took some, and they were assigned their spirit animals, a datura ceremony, a Jimson weed ceremony. One of the guys, we were running out of animals because everybody wants to be a bighorn sheep, you know, everybody wants to be a hawk or a something, you know, the great animals. And so we were handing out insect names because we'd run out of all the good animals. And so we named this one guy the Brown Recluse, and he ran with it, you know, all eight legs. He ran with it and started going around biting people and saying, now you're dead, now you're dead.
We'll do a little quick thing here on the. Well, we're in the Alamo Diner. A bunch of suspicious characters came in. We've got. Can you say your name and rank?
If you are driving through Mojave Trails, National Monument and Mojave National Preserve, just a short drive from here, past Wonder Valley and follow the road to the left, do watch out for a phenomenon that seems to bother a lot of late night drivers. It's the Amboy Road Spook Lights. What happens is that you'll be driving that two-lane road by yourself, and all of a sudden you'll see what looks like some tough guy in a Dodge Charger or something going about 100 miles an hour coming right up behind you. And you were trying to go a safe and sane 60 or 70 or... And once the lights are right up on you, you'll find that the car doesn't pass you, and you're blinded until you stop. And when you stop, the lights retreat at the same speed that they'd come up upon you, and you never see an actual car. The last time I mentioned this to some people was out at Amboy Crater last week. And three people came up afterwards and had the exact or very similar experiences. So, it might be a long-running prank by either humans or possibly ET. But no one has pinned down who's responsible yet. Has anyone been to Amboy Crater? It's a beautiful volcanic crater. You can walk down in it. Don't go too late in the day. People tend to die walking back. It gets very hot. Five people died in the last 2 years on an easy day hike to Amboy Crater. Well, in 1962, when Amboy was still a booming tourist town because Route 66 was how you got to Los Angeles. And the garages and the diner all ran round the clock. Three shifts at the diner at Roy's alone. Local kids from the high school had noticed some local scare stories in the news about seismic action around supposedly extinct volcanoes in the California desert. And as there was a big crater right there overlooking the town of Amboy, a group of local high schoolers took it upon themselves to fill a pickup truck with old tires from the Roy's garage. In the days of more lax enforcement of public lands laws, they rolled all the tires down into the bottom of Amboy Crater, poured a can of gasoline on them, and suddenly the town was horrified to see black smoke rising from the long extinct volcano. People were packing their bags, and then the sheriff's deputy decided to drive over there and caught the kids on the way out. He did, according to legend, send them back to put out the fire. In the 1980s, at the height of the satanic panic, anytime anybody from a church found anything that could possibly be interpreted as satanic, it caused an immediate community outrage. So at the bottom of Amboy Crater, on several occasions, the mere appearance of what appeared to be a pentagram dragged into the dirt, or maybe just somebody's walking stick dragging in the dirt behind them, caused the special satanic investigators from the SoCal Satanic Cult Task Force to come in and investigate.
The plan had been to broadcast tonight from a high desert landmark. I don't know if the ways we communicate over distance today will be with us tomorrow. I'm putting together the new newspaper. It's becoming a newspaper now. Of the desert southwest, as it always has been. And at the same time, the print shops, the printing plants, the offset and web presses, they're telling me the mail service is being squeezed to the point that nobody can guarantee that the mail will get out anymore. You know, Benjamin Franklin was our first postmaster in this country. He was a publisher of periodicals. And yeah, despite the crimes of his time, despite the fact that he himself kept several human beings enslaved until he saw the light, Ben Franklin later served as president of the first abolitionist society. But Benjamin Franklin's not the postmaster anymore. The The method we employ to share this radio show around the world, that too is at the mercy of huge corporations and oppressive governments. Flimsy networks of social media. You see that picture of the Roadrunner? Standing in that bulldozed, scraped desert your tax dollars paid to destroy? That murder scene? The Roadrunner is looking up at this absolute monstrosity. Three stories high, rows of razor wire against concrete and metal. And you know Roadrunners. This Roadrunner's looking up and you can almost hear its thoughts. This is its home, where it finds the lizards it eats for lunch. Just as it will, in time, become the dinner for the ravens, for the ants. Maybe even a lucky old coyote one of these days. But now the Roadrunner's desert home is dead sand, like when some baffled suburbanite moves out here and hires the local dude with the little bulldozer to scrape the entire quarter acre clean. Clean of any living thing, dead sand and a wall made of pure hate and human corruption. That's what this Roadrunner's looking at. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. Broadcasting to you tonight from our dark little radio studio on the edge of the Great Mojave Wilderness. Instead of the planned live broadcast, oh well. We just can't count on anything in these times. Sometimes we are all just bashed around the great cosmic pinball machine. But sometimes we get to work the lever. When we next meet in person, in the flesh, maybe it'll be on the streets. Maybe it'll be within the Desert National Wildlife Refuge that the Pentagon is very close to taking away with the approval of militaristic Democrats in Congress. Maybe it'll be on the border, or at a drive-in movie theater, or out behind the liquor store, where we can drink each other's health and work it all out. But we'll be together on the airwaves, or through the newspaper, or on the road, or on the run. Thanks to Gary and Cindy and Cody and everybody from KCDZ 107.7 FM, our community radio station, for letting me take over the airwaves on Friday nights. Thanks to Sarah Snyder for making sure the machinery is working. To Red, Blue, Black, Silver for the soundscapes. Thanks to all of you for tuning in from wherever you are, however you listen. On the air from Amboy to Zizek's. Streaming from Z1077FM.com. You can support the show on patreon.com/Desert Oracle. Good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGBM, Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM, and streaming online at kgbm.org. Our second Desert Oracle Radio episode today came from Ken Lane, July 22nd, 2022. It was about that time that, well, I'll just play it here for you to consider. Can we learn something from this? Here is Guidestones of the End Times.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Well, the nighttime is the only time worth talking about this time of year. I walked out to pay reverence to the moon when it was still enormous last week. I stroll around a little bit, head up the road to lock the gate for the night. You might not describe the weather as delightful, but it was bearable. I mean, the breeze is hot on nights like this. So eventually, I head back inside, and I guess that's how I brought this big scorpion into the house. Stuck to the bottom of my ratty old take-out-the-garbage shoes, you know, the ones you leave by the front door. And it must have come loose in the hallway, that's when I noticed on the way back. This poor scorpion, maybe 3 inches long, sort of smushed on the Spanish tile. As always, even when it's not really the sort of all creatures, great and small wildlife, that belongs in the house, I mourned its death for a moment. I thought it was dead. And then I figured I'd sweep it outside on the way back. Just gonna grab the broom. As I'm getting the broom, that's when I wonder exactly how it got there. Well, guess what? There's a scorpion-sized damp blotch on the sole of one of my shoes. The right shoe, if you're wondering. I feel terrible for stepping on the poor thing when it was just doing its work out on the sands, but also relieved that I was wearing shoes at all. Because otherwise I would be feeling pretty bad myself. Those stings never get easier, it turns out. They're always something you'd prefer never happened. They're like a real bad hangover in one spot. So I'm only gone for a minute, but when I return to the hall, the dead scorpion is gone. Well, it doesn't take long to find out where it went, which is the floor of the bathroom off the hall. I figure I better finish it off, because otherwise I might get myself a stinger full after all. So I smack it with the flat part of the dustpan, and now it's not going anywhere. Until I sweep it towards the dustpan and it coils up and springs away. It takes another good couple of whacks before I feel any confidence that it's not going to jump down my shirt somehow. Using some law of physics I do not understand. But even then, The stinger is up, the tail maintaining that elegant, ominous curve. Now, before you report me to the Mojave Desert Land Trust or whatever, I want to make clear that I'd already crushed it by accident and found it motionless and flattened in the hallway. Its vital fluids were already dried up on the bottom of my shoe. And yet, it went to the next room, a good 10 feet away. And yes, thank God, it was the same scorpion. It was still flattened and not moving at all that I could tell. It was not healthy. It could not be rehomed. I could not advertise it on PetFinder.com. If I'd had any idea it still had walking and stinging left in its quiver, I would have just swept it outside. Godspeed, brother. Sorry about putting my full weight onto you and then taking another 50 or 60 steps with you stuck to the bottom of my shoe until you fell off. I mean, I know scorpions are well-designed creatures, but good Lord, this was the Glenn Close of scorpions. The night is when we are free. Humans really don't wake up until about sundown. That's a true fact. 7 to 9 p.m., that's when your brain is at its best and in harmony with the rest of you. No wonder we're all so miserable, dragging ourselves through the daytime, driving through the Union Buster coffee chain 6 times a day until we're once again wondering why public toilets don't exist in this country. But at night, if you have the night to yourself or share it with people who make life better and not worse, well, it's hard to say goodbye to the night. It's quiet if you let it be. The sacred night, the holy night, and it points to a quieter time on the way here on planet Earth. The human population is slowing down so fast that all the governments and entertainment companies of the world are in a total panic. A quieter world is coming, a lot less of us, more birds and animals. Maybe more Wall-E solar robots collecting the plastic in the oceans, eating the invasive weeds in the wilderness, organizing the DVDs they dig up by genre and date of release. Be of good cheer. And maybe the night owls, the humankind, I mean, are pointing to this future. Here's something I got off the internet. Maybe it's even true. Being a night owl is a sign of higher intelligence, even genius. Tell that to your red-faced boss who's waiting for you at 7 a.m. and got up at 5 to go to the gym and watch cable news while angrily lifting things for no reason. The more creative and intelligent you are, science says,
the more likely you are to prefer the late night hours, the solitude and quiet. The more intelligent you are, the more the ravings and jabberings and bad vibes of other people get to you, which might be why you prefer time alone as much as possible. It's like a psychic getting on a subway train at rush hour. You're just overwhelmed. And it might be an evolutionary change for the better. There have been studies, surveys, MRIs, and the consensus appears to be that night owls don't have as much stress, don't have as much bad energy banging around the skull. And that deviation from the human norm of getting up early is associated with higher IQ, whatever that is. Regular people hit their mental peak around 9 in the morning, but the night owl hits that peak around 9 p.m. when we're naturally more awake. And we generally have clarity and energy until we finally retire at whatever late hour. Early birds are usually angry, as you may have noticed. It's the stress. They suffer from more headaches, body aches, illnesses, more cortisol going around. And at the end of their long, dreary day, their cognitive abilities have collapsed, and they are utterly exhausted. Which I guess is why so many people watch TV at night. Maybe that's why those TV shows with all the decapitations and torture gore are so popular. Maybe that sort of blunt force violence and screaming is the only stuff that gets through the thick mental fog of the exhausted modern human. But for you, the lucky night owl, at 9 or 10 p.m., your central nervous system and spinal cord excitability are at peak levels. Excellent conditions for imagination, for breakthroughs, for inventions and purpose, for reading comprehension, for clarity, for walking in the moonlight. Since the pandemic, there's less life at night. That's true wherever I've been in America these past couple of years. Restaurants and bars close earlier. All-night diners are done at 11 if they survive the lockdowns at all. Casinos keep that air conditioning blasting for a dwindling handful of zombies. 24-hour grocery stores and superstores and all those sickly, fluorescent-lit retail warehouses have mostly returned to the business hours of decades past. Because there are not enough customers, not enough people out. And people are scared, too. Scared of violence. Not so much from mysterious criminals in the shadows, but from each other. Looking at your phone while furtively watching your surroundings has become the primary public behavior for most Americans. You don't want to draw anybody's attention because the population is unhinged. Unhinged and desperate for human contact, even if it's yelling at a stranger about some illiterate nonsense on Facebook. Lay low. If somebody's screaming at the loan checkout clerk about something on the news, well, maybe you really don't need eggs and milk and toothpaste for tomorrow morning anyway. What a time to still be alive. There was an explosion and fire at the Hoover Dam on Tuesday morning. A tourist got the video and posted it on Twitter. scene foretold in the opening of Edward Abbey's novel, The Monkey Wrench Gang. Not exactly. It was the Glen Canyon Dam in Abbey's book, and it was TikTok. And there was a lot of water behind the dam. After Tuesday's explosion, there was a thick rope of black smoke rising up from the turbine house on the Arizona side rather than a great big crack down the middle of the dam. The wild part, noticed as I was scrolling through the climate doom, is that a retired American living down in Mexico had posted and predicted, just after the Georgia Guidestones were blown up by some Taliban cosplay gang on July 7, that Hoover Dam was next. I guess I'd never thought about the Georgia Guidestones and Hoover Dam as being peas in a pod, but it's hard to keep up with everything. Which is why I generally don't bother. A little news goes a long way, especially when, like the retired guy in Mexico, I generally know what's coming. Not enough to profit from it, just enough to rarely be surprised. The Georgia Guidestones are something I only knew about from internet conspiracy forums. I'd never seen them myself. I did not care for the design, honestly. Inspired by Stonehenge, so they say, but they look like a water feature in an Atlanta mall circa 1980. Which makes sense, as they were erected in the year 1980 in rural Georgia's Elbert County. They were an explicit message to humanity, humanity of the future, for people who survived the tribulations thought to be imminent, nuclear war, societal collapse, catastrophic climate change, etc. In English, Spanish, Swahili, Hindi, Hebrew, Arabic, traditional Chinese, Russian, Babylonian, classical Greek, Sanskrit, and Egyptian hieroglyphs, the Guidestones aim to instruct the survivors of our self-inflicted calamities in ways to do it better next time. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Unite humanity with a living new language. Rule passion, faith, and tradition with tempered reason. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Let all nations rule themselves, resolving external disputes in a world court. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Balance personal rights with social duties. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. Because of the curiously perverted tenor of our times, I bet you heard the problematic parts instead of noticing what you might agree with. Our brains are broken. Like Stonehenge, which inspired the creators of the Georgia Guidestones, if not the architecture itself, the monumental stones served as an astrological calendar, a compass, a clock. Maybe some advice for rebuilding a human society would be useful. The Guidestones creators figured. And for three decades, the angry mobs mostly ignored this outdoor sculpture in a cow pasture. Locally, it was riling up the evangelicals since its construction and unveiling on the vernal equinox of the year 1980. Fundamentalist preachers on the rise in that era of the moral majority in Ronald Reagan saw echoes of the Book of Revelation when they read the messages. Even if the Book of Revelation is explicitly about the Roman Empire's persecution of the then-new cult of Christ. and the engraver of the stones, a local man named Charlie Clamp, said he had been constantly distracted by, quote, strange music and disjointed voices. While he sandblasted the 4,000 characters into the granite slabs. By the time Wired magazine did a feature story on the Guidestones in 2009, at least a few people were calling the messages the Ten Commandments of the Antichrist and painting Death to the New World Order on the granite sculpture by Cover of Darkness. Who did put up those stones anyway? I mean, we know the granite company and the stone cutters and all that, but who designed it? Who paid for it? Here's how that same Wired magazine story describes the mystery and how it arrived in Elbert County, Georgia in the year 1979. An elegant, gray-haired gentleman wearing a very nice, expensive suit showed up in Elbert County, made his way to the offices of Elberton Granite Finishing, and introduced himself as R.C. Christian, who claimed to represent a small group of loyal Americans who had been planning the installation of an unusually large and complex stone monument. Christian had come to Elberton because he believed its quarries produced the finest granite on the planet. As later conspiracy theorists and curious historians have since pointed out, R.C. Christian, which the man readily admitted was a pseudonym, sounds more than a little like the pseudonym of the mysterious man who introduced the Illuminati to Europe in a trio of anonymously published tracts in the early 17th century. Christian Rosenkreutz, or Christian of the Rosy Cross, the first Rosicrucian. 601 years after the supposed birth of Christian Rosenkreutz in the year 1378, R.C. Christian walked in the office of a Georgia stonemason. Let's go back to Randall Sullivan's article in Wired from a dozen years ago. Visitors kept coming, but after several failed investigations into the identity of R.C. Christian, the media lost interest. Curiosity flared again briefly in 1993 when Yoko Ono contributed a track called Georgia Stone to a tribute album for avant-garde composer John Cage, with Ono chanting the 10th and final guide nearly verbatim. Be not a cancer on earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. The messages on the Guidestones are pretty good advice overall. Live with, not against nature. Leave room for nature, or watch out, buddy. We are all learning that this week again around the world. Even the simple-minded are starting to get the picture, which you can sort of parse out from the increasingly insane denials of the monstrous heat waves, killing thousands around the world every day now, in these crushing summers of the early 21st century. Avoid oppressive laws. Well, that seems relevant. Avoid petty politicians and officials. Sure, let's do that. Even the supposedly problematic advice about human populations make good sense. Fitness and diversity are pretty good goals, aren't they? Pay attention to the stars, the movements of the sun. That's how we tell time, dummies. Try to prevent another slow burn apocalypse if you can. Well, this monument that was supposed to outlast the apocalypse was instead felled by a couple of rednecks in a compact car who planted a little bit of explosives around a couple of the Guidestones and drove away. The usual blurry frame from a surveillance camera made the rounds. Immediately, because R.C. Christian deeded the land he bought to the county, so no permission was necessary. The county was out there with bulldozers and destroyed the rest of the monument, just to be safe, just to keep the New World Order at bay, I suppose. It's something to think about. If you're involved in the creation of supposedly permanent megaliths, as the Long Now Foundation has been doing, Or if you're working on those monuments to warn future people to stay away from our nuclear waste dumps in the Nevada desert. Never mind the distant future, your real concern should be making the thing last through the wars of insanity which are here now and today. No point denying it. This is the time of the roundheads attacking anything they can hit one way or another. Ruin some random person's life on the internet, blow up some statues, bomb the Hoover Dam. Well, who knows what to believe? But the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation said the explosion and fire at the base of the dam was just an electrical transformer gone bad. And those things do tend to blow up under stress. Who knows? Who knows? Answers will not be forthcoming for anybody regarding anything. Isaacs and across the great Mojave wilderness and beyond. This is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting on Friday nights at 10 p.m. from Joshua Tree. And out over Yucca Valley, 29 Palms, Pipes Canyon, Gamma Gulch, Wonder Valley. Wherever you are in the Mojave High Desert on this summer evening. And if you're somewhere else, that's all right, too. Get the podcast wherever you do that, Desert Oracle Radio. Our paperback edition of Desert Oracle Volume 1 is out now from Picador Books. Thanks for keeping it on the Los Angeles Times bestsellers list all the way into July. And thanks to our patrons for supporting this show, which you can do from our website, desertoracle.com. Red, Blue, Black, Silver made the soundscapes you heard on this program. And our closing theme is by Pierre Langer. Please don't leave your pets or your annoying relatives in the hot car. And no matter how high you've lifted your truck, please don't try to cross a raging monsoon flash flood. And maybe wait until after dark to take your walk in this sort of weather, in this sort of climate. This is your host, Ken Lane, signing off. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Remember, I am drawing from the library of Desert Oracle Radio episodes, so any live events Ken mentioned in these shows are over. Over and done. I hope there will be more. I wish it would show up in Bozeman. I can hope. My thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you for listening and supporting KGBM. This program is broadcast on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, and it streams online at kgbm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams. See you next week.